Victor knows the fine details of insuring firms like yours. For over 60 years, Victor has provided outstanding service and broad, flexible, and innovative professional liability solutions to engineering firms and ACEC members. As a Victor insured, you have access to free, on-demand continuing education courses, automated contract reviews, and endless risk management tools and resources to help manage projects and grow your business. Visit www.victorinsuranceus.com/ACEC to learn more. Welcome to Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We are gearing up heading into our fall conference. And this podcast and the podcast you're going to be hearing throughout the fall conference are brought to us and sponsored by our friends at Victor Insurance Managers, one of the largest and most experienced underwriting managers of professional liability and specialty insurance programs in the world. We are very, very pleased to bring them on board and be part of our podcast for the conference. So looking forward to that. And to kick off the conference podcast series, I'm very pleased to be joined by Yvonne Castillo and Nahum Gabriel, Victor Insurance. As you all know, they are really knowledgeable when it comes to A&E issues. And in fact, both Yvonne and Nahum are experts when it comes to engineering. Yvonne is the director of management and at Victor Insurance and is the director of risk management at Victor Insurance and manages a team of consultants who specialize in risk management for engineers, architects, and other design firms. She has a degree in architecture and is also a lawyer of 27 years, and she has a background in litigation and public policy, and was formerly a lobbyist for the American Institute of Architects out in Texas. And Nahum is a risk management consultant with Victor Insurance as well. He's a registered professional engineer who is he has practiced civil engineering prior to his involvement with risk management issues. And his background includes services as in-house counsel and project manager for a large engineering firm. And he provides risk management advice to Victor Insurance and CNA policyholders. So two very knowledgeable experts here to join us today to talk about a range of issues, including climate change, commodity pricing, supply chain disruptions, which we're all hearing about, and crisis management plans. And I do want to kick it off to Yvonne, because we're hearing a lot about climate change in the news, and that insurers are paying closer attention to the risks of severe weather. This is something our members are paying a lot more attention to. It's something as an organization, ACEC, is paying attention to, because our industry is responsible for designing the built environment. And we want to make sure that the built environment is designed to withstand a change in climate. And what's designed today has to stand 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now. And we know the weather is changing. In combination with everything else engineers are thinking about and going into their designs, from a professional standpoint, what should they be thinking about, especially when it comes to professional liability implications?
Yeah. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having us. First of all, appreciate the opportunity to speak to your members. As it relates to climate science, I think your listeners should first of all be aware that there is new climate science that's been released from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. If your listeners don't know who they are, it's a global scientific community. And they released a report just a little over 2 months ago in August of this year. And in that report, we basically have greater probability or higher insight into what to expect in terms of the future of climate and severe weather patterns. I definitely encourage your members to read the report. But for me, the biggest takeaway that I want to share with your folks is that what they concluded in the report was global warming is going to increase essentially for the next 30 years. They knew that with high scientific probability that the global surface temperatures are going to increase. And with that, knowing that that's our future for the next 30 years, of course, we're going to have more severe weather patterns. The report details what to expect in certain parts of the world. For example, more severe fire and droughts in the western part of the United States, more severe precipitation on the east coast of the United States and parts of the middle of our country, more extreme tropical cyclones, which again, that's going to cause more flooding and erosion. And so the key takeaway for me that I want to share is that now that we know with higher levels of scientific probability what to expect for the coming years, that will have impacts on how engineers should be thinking about their projects. Yeah,
absolutely, especially those engineers who are designing in coastal areas or the western portions of the United States, which have become increasingly susceptible to fire. I would imagine that, you know, given your experience in the industry, for both of you, both in the architecture and engineering sides of the world, it doesn't just go towards the people who are structural engineers. I mean, wastewater, water designers, I would imagine they also have a part to play in this and should really be paying attention to it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we went back after reading the report and looked at what American jurisprudence, what cases were saying about climate change and foreseeability as it relates to impacts on design firms. And what we found was, generally speaking, the courts have taken a pretty broad approach to the issue of foreseeability and the duty of care for design firms to be able to anticipate more severe weather patterns. I don't think it is isolated to any type of project or area of practice. I think that engineers, based on this new climate science, need to be thinking about how courts have already viewed this. And with new climate science, I think the courts and jurors, for that matter, as fact finders, are going to likely hold engineers and architects accountable for future climate risks. So it's just something we definitely need to be thinking about.
Are there any jurisdictions that are more activist in this that tend to take a more, don't want to use the kind of the political idioms here, but the more progressive approach towards taking into consideration changes to climate in their case law compared to other jurisdictions?
I definitely think I understand where you're going. There are definitely states that are more litigious than others. And if you're an engineer in those states, you should definitely be extra vigilant about thinking about how you're not just designing your projects, you know, in a sort of as a matter of course, but also thinking about how are you going to incorporate adaptation strategies, or at least raise those adaptation strategies with your clients. And I think gone are the days where you can think about project development as I'm going to design to code and that's going to be my requirement. I think you have to be thinking way beyond that and anticipating for your clients what these new severe weather patterns are going to mean for, as you said earlier, physical assets that are intended to be in place for several decades. This is, it's just a new reality.
Yeah, I think it always comes back to that idea that, you know, we try to talk about at ACEC. It's just that, of course, it fights against the overall threat towards commoditization of the industry, but it also goes to the, protecting yourself by not just, like you said, designing the code and, okay, you want something, you want a building design, we'll build a design, design it to code. But it's that advisory service, that trusted advisor role that engineers play. I think what you raised was a good point, that you should have these strategies in place to work with a client, that while you're in the design process, to take all of these emerging risks into consideration, and in such a way where you, as a firm, you protect yourself against the potential for exposure, you know, for professional liability when you're designing in a high-risk environment.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing we definitely recognize at Victor is, you know, ultimately it's the client's money. And if they don't want to invest in resiliency strategies that you believe should be incorporated, if you have those conversations and you document those conversations in your communications with your clients, or whatever adaptation strategies you have recommended, and your client says, no, I don't want to invest, I don't want to go that far, or I don't want to go beyond code, you are in such a better position going into potential litigation. If you can imagine as a judge or a jury looking at your interrogatories during litigation, or listening or reading depositions, and they see that the engineering firm had these proactive conversations with their clients, then absolutely, you're in a much better position for mitigating your liability exposure.
Nahum, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about something else that's happening, and it's in the news everywhere. We're entering the holiday season. Amazingly, it's been a quick year already, but, you know, commodity pricing and supply chain disruptions. I mean, we're hearing that these supply chain disruptions are going to extend into 2022. And while we're seeing a lot on the consumer side, from our industry at least, you know, there hasn't been, at least in what we're seeing, it hasn't been a massive impact unless you're talking about materials, wood, steel, and the like. You know, how does this impact engineers? What, you know, from your perspective, what are you seeing from the supply chain and commodity side of the world?
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Like you said, we've all seen the news reports about trucks unable to move cargo out of ports, how there's congestion, and there's just real issues in getting goods out into the country. Engineers as designers obviously are not directly impacted because you're providing services. However, you do have, as we see it, a contractual risk, because what this is going to mean is that what you design today, when the construction bids come in, they're going to come in higher than expected due to the disruption. And you do have contractual risk. A lot of typical contracts, for example, the EJCDC engineering contract, requires that you redesign at cost if bids come in higher than the owner's budget for the cost of the work. So you are facing potentially notion that you will be redesigning at cost, and that obviously is going to impact profitability for your project. So the first thing I think you should all engineering firms should do is to address this in their contracts. First of all, re-examine what is in your existing contract. Do you have that type of business risk? Because if you do have that exposure, you could be redesigning a cost every time the bid comes in higher than expected. So you should certainly start planning along those lines.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I mean, it's looking at the contract going into it. And you know, I would imagine that it's really the point of taking a contractual approach that protects the engineer and has the increase in the commodity prices being pretty much borne by the owner of the project, right? It's kind of trying to word it in such a way where the owner takes a little bit more responsibility than the engineer.
Correct. Because that ultimately, as you know, the owner has the benefit of the facility. So that type of risk should not fall on the engineer. But we also expect owners to become much more aware of this risk, and I think, and we've already seen indications of this, that they will start imposing solutions on the engineer because, hey, we know steel is going to go up, so hey, maybe we shouldn't, find another design solution. So anytime they are going to they see this, if they're going to dictate particular design solutions as opposed to looking to the engineering firm to provide optimum solutions for the problem. So as you noted earlier, as a trusted advisor, you should certainly think about, well, how do I stay on top of these trends? How do I maintain that trusted advisor role? And that really comes down to you being aware of what is going on and being able to provide meaningful advice, because the concern, as always with ACEC member firms, is that indeed your services are increasingly becoming commoditized, and anytime you have an owner coming in and telling you what to do, then that's the danger. So we think this could have impacts along those lines as well, and firms really do have the responsibility to educate themselves.
And yeah, and that underscores the importance of the work we're doing on the private market side with Aaron McLaughlin's monthly economic updates, the regular private market briefs that look at different pressures, both positive and negative, on the economy to have a better idea of exactly what's coming up and what to look forward to, so that you can take that into consideration when speaking with clients, that you're not just looking at the design, but you also have that insight onto what the market is doing and what the trend lines are for the economy. And if you have any questions about that, to feel free to reach out to us and get in touch with our experts to be able to give you some insight on what's coming next, so you can be an educated part of the conversation and protect yourself going in. So that's a really good point that you raise. I want to also open it up, both of you, to talk about something else, which is crisis management, which,
Before
before we go
we
in,
get to before we move on to that, Jeff, there's one more thing that I really want to touch on in regards to volatility. One thing that, as a professional liability underwriter, we're also concerned about, and as goes to our business model, is obviously the subject of claims. And in this environment, I think firms should expect that it's likely that claims will go up. An owner is simply more likely to bring a claim of negligent performance for, number one, the engineer not recognizing cost escalation issues, likely to have project delays because materials are not available, and the owner is going to have economic losses, and they're going to look to parties against whom they can make claims against. So certainly the contractor is impacted. They're going to make claim against the owner. Oftentimes you're going to face a claim from the owner trying to recoup some of these losses. So we have seen this in the past. Historically, that claims are problematic in these types of pressures. So it's also fundamentally a business concern for ACEC member firms.
That's a really good point. Yeah, and that is a market reality, right? If there's a greater volatility, then there's a greater chance that there will be claim activity. I mean, it just kind of goes hand in hand. So it is critically important that our member firms are cognizant of that and expect it and anticipate it going into times of economic uncertainty. Now, looking at crisis management, this is something which, it's an interesting point because, my background is in communications. I used to be a, communicator at a public relations firm, and we used to work with clients on crisis management issues. And everybody knows to have a crisis management plan in place. Now, the problem is that a lot of people know it, but they don't do it. And if they have one in place, they did it once and it's on the shelf and it's collecting dust. And both are preventable threats to your business. So let's talk a little bit more about crisis management plans. What, from your perspective, I mean, how would you approach this, and what are the top things to think about?
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. And the reason, you know, we started thinking about this quite honestly is what happened earlier this year with the sudden collapse of the Surfside, Florida condo building. This is the most recent example that is still top of mind for all of us. But for firms, you could be hit with any number of crises. It could be a cyber attack, a technology failure, or a catastrophic failure at a construction site on one of your projects. So the scenarios are varied, and we'll talk about what should go into a crisis management plan, but you should really think about that this could be an existential threat for your business. From the professional liability standpoint, what we see most often and what I've seen happen is that you know, there's a catastrophic failure at a construction site. And that's the issue that's most likely to involve your professional liability policy. And I've seen firms have different responses. Some are ready to activate their plan, and some are just winging it and don't quite know what to do. So the first thing I think firms should think about is outlining the various crisis scenarios. I outlined a couple. But you should think about what your business does and then outline some scenarios. And then you need to plan how you will respond to those various scenarios. It's important that you assign responsibility for each task and identify the resources that will be needed during the crisis. Those resources could be as varied as credit cards, account information, flow charts of key processes and procedures. And, you know, for each type of scenario, you can imagine that it's not enough just to be able to say, oh, it's on our network somewhere. Well, what if it's a cyber issue and you can't access your network? You really need to delve into what some of the potential issues would be and how you can get access to that information.
Yeah, and that is only compounded if you're dealing with a contract, with a federal agency, and it's non-public information, or it's confidential or secured or privileged information. It extends. You know, we have so many different potential threats now. Not just, you know, of course, catastrophic failure at a site is, like you said, probably the most feasible for the work that our members do, but it's extended out to now with the greater reliance on technology, something going wrong with the technology, something going wrong with your computer systems. And you're right, bringing in everyone at the firm who deals with this. And Yvonne, I guess from a legal perspective too, I mean, that's where it brings in the importance of making sure that a firm's, you know, GC or you know, retained counsel is also sped up and part of whatever crisis management planning goes on.
Jeff, I think you're right. And also, as you all were talking, I was thinking about severe weather events and power outages, failure of, you know, your computer systems, ability to communicate. All of that, it should be top of mind when you're thinking about a crisis management plan. What if, you know, this happens, and how are we going to communicate? How are we going to communicate with our clients? How are we going to continue to work? All those things that you would ask a client when you're designing a facility applies to your own operations.
And once you have the management plan, you know, human beings, oftentimes your response is paralysis. In the event of a crisis, you know, is it fight, flight? You don't quite know what to do. And the learned response for the firm should be, if you've gone through this process, is to refer to your plan. What should we do? What are the things, what are the resources we need to gather? What steps should we take? And as Yvonne mentioned, obviously the plan should have clear chains of command to make sure that your response is coordinated. And communication, as was mentioned, is very important. You need to have both internal communication plans and external. Internal, dealing with your resources, your employees, depending on the situation, how do you reach out to them, ensure their safety, and then, of course, to the broader public. Your clients, the news outlets, the case, whatever the case may be. What is it that, how are you going to communicate your issues and make sure that it's coming out with a consistent voice? These are all things that, as you know, Jeff, if you've worked in this space, that are really, really essential, especially in the first, 2 to 3 weeks of anything that hits your firm. You need to have that, your ducks in a row, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's having your ducks in a row. It's having, like you said, a clear, defined chain of command with roles and responsibilities. All the materials that you would need to respond essentially collected in a place where you can refer to it quickly so you're not scrambling for information. But, having that in place is only useful if you know how to use it. And that's, I think, why it's so important that once you have a plan in place, you have to stress test it. And that's where tabletop, good old tabletop exercises of, okay, guys, we just had a catastrophic failure. What are we going to do? And test your plan.
Absolutely. And that's really the final point that I wanted to make. A plan is no good if it's just written on paper and it hasn't been tested. You need to hold mock exercises and make sure that it works in real life and fine tune it accordingly. And these, should, this means that you have to spend time doing this, and it's a matter of resources. And I get it. A firm has to account for its time, make sure that, resources are being used wisely. But, in light of everything that is going on, in light of the myriad of risks that you will be facing, I think this is something that really needs to be thought about and implemented so that you can have at least some peace of mind that, hey, if I get hit, you don't want to get hit with an issue, but if I get hit, I have a plan in place. I kind of know what the framework looks like and what your plan of attack is going to be, and then you will be able to come out, hopefully, in a much better place after the crisis is over.
Yeah, you're right. It's not fun. It's time-consuming. You have work you need to be doing that pays the bills and keeps the firm running, right? That's actual, project-related work. But dedicating the time to this and having a team in place who runs this is really critical, and it's just not a question of doing it once. It needs to be revisited and it needs to be updated. And if you have a crisis management plan that has been sitting on a shelf for a couple of years, it may not apply to the world that we're living in right now, and things change. Contacts change, the people you need to talk to, regulatory agencies change, the media changes. So it's critically important to keep those plans up to date and to test them on a regular basis. I think we could have a whole show and a whole series of webinars just on crisis management planning, because it's there's so much going into it. We covered a lot here. I mean, Yvonne, Nahum, is there anything that we have not covered that you want to make sure that we get across?
I think we've covered a lot. the only thing I was going to add was, you said things are changing and, we're living in a different time. And I think that is so true. Unfortunately, claimants' appetites for litigation are changing. Courts' appetite for hearing, going back to the climate change conversation, their appetite for hearing disputes that relate to climate change are increasing. Financial markets, their exposure levels with everything that's going on at the climate level and climate disclosure risks, that's changing. And then, of course, legislative and then regulatory frameworks, as we're watching on the Hill right now, they're going to change in the next 2 weeks. So it's really important that engineering firms are prepared for this and, you know, spending a little, investing a little extra time in making plans for all of this, I think is going to be well worth the investment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the point that you raised earlier is really well taken, the fact that if you are unfortunate and you find yourself in a situation where something goes to a jury, I mean, when you think about it, people's understanding and thoughts related towards climate change are changing also, that they're becoming more understanding to it and more open to an argument that could be made that maybe 10 years ago it wouldn't have worked in court, and those juries are more susceptible to that, and the courts are as well. And, you know, especially we're seeing it right now in Washington with the reconciliation bill and the infrastructure bill, with the increased attention paid to resiliency and sustainability. So all this is a changing playing field, and we all have to be paying attention to it so we protect ourselves. And it's great to know that there are experts like yourself and the home to really, you know, help our firms navigate all this.
Yeah, and Jeff, just a quick note, and I just did a webinar for the AIA Trust on climate change and professional liability impacts. I did that on Monday. It's on our website, so if any of your firms want to listen, it's still, you know, fresh, and you can go to the School of Risk Management News and Events page, and you can stream the webinar under the archived webinars. It's it should be top of the list right there, right. So they can review
it. That's victorinsuranceus.com, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. Well, Nahum and Avant, really thank you for taking the time today to speak with us, and thanks again for being part of our fall conference. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And again, this has been Engineering Influence, brought to you by Victor Insurance. We look forward to seeing you at the fall conference. Stop by our podcast booth. It's going to be on the main floor. And join us, because it's going to be a great time. And don't be shy. If there's an open mic, sit down. Talk to us. We want to hear what you have to say. And we will see you very soon. Thanks again.